Good morning, class. It's Professor Coppolino here with what I think is going to actually be part one of the audio portion of this. And then when I feel like I've got enough materials down in audio, which I'm personally more comfortable using, you don't need to be staring at my face while I am explaining these things. I will record the video, and then for those who are in the philosophy of astrology class, I am open to having a meeting at any time to talk about this. So, going all the way back to the beginning of what it means to read astrology, one of the things that many people do first is they get a copy of their chart, and then they figure out that you can tell which glyph the moon is, and then you can tell which glyph Virgo is, and then they look up moon and Virgo, and they think they're reading the chart. And this skips about 10 steps of the way to reading the chart. And, you know, using the chart as a kind of a key to looking things up is, it's certainly a valid use of a chart, and it's reading on one level. It's on the level of, looking at the answer key. It's not on the on the level of conjuring, coming up with an original interpretation, which is the goal of reading astrology. You know, to be parroting the things that are written in books. And that's not to say that the commentaries are not helpful. I call the books commentaries to put in context what they actually are, which is that they are commentaries. They are not the true interpretation of the aspect or of the placement by house or sign or whatever it might be. Continuing that thought, the commentaries are important because sometimes you can pluck gems out of them, and sometimes you see an example of what's so horrendous you would never want to say that to a client. And sometimes in the case of Debbie Kempton Smith, Secrets of a Stargazer's Notebook, which is by no means a book for professional level astrology reading, but it is the best book on personality level astrology, which can be very helpful for professional astrologers. And it's fucking hilarious. You read things in that book you never forget as long as you live, because they're just so funny and they're so apropos of the, they're so apropos and in that respect helpful. I knew Debbie. She was a bit of a dark type of personality with a wicked sense of humor. You want the commentaries. You want to read the commentaries as much as you can. You want to read astrology books, but what you don't want to do is think that the astrology book is in any way the truth or the bottom line. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. What I want to talk about today is what happens when you go from no chart to chart. No chart might mean, you're a Pisces, and Pisces are supposed to be laid-back people who like to go shopping. But when you have a chart, that shifts everything, and it shifts everything from a set of beliefs and concepts to a tool and a holistic view of things. And the fundamental difference between no chart and chart is one of perspective. So no chart means that you are essentially on the ground, on the playing field of existence, and you certainly might be good at that. You might have knowledge and information, and you might even know a lot about astrology from studying people and conversations with them. You might be very good at the game of life. You might, like some people, feel like they're terrible at the game of life. Whatever the case may be, whatever your feeling of your place in the world is, no chart is essentially on the level of the playing field without a broad and holistic overview, which is what the chart gives you. So the first thing that you do when you have a chart in your hands, your chart someone's chart of an event, is that you are suddenly above the game. You are looking down at the whole picture. And in this sense, it does not matter what the whole picture says, the details, the specifics, what house things are in, where all the planets are clustered up, or whatever else may be going on, what it says about the person. All of that is secondary to the fact that suddenly your perspective has shifted to one where now you are looking at a holos, a holistic image, a hologram, a diagram, a map, a representation separate from it. You are on another level. You've got this thing that you are going to try to understand. And that shift in perspective is the single most important thing to remember when you are reading astrology. And it is the thing that is the easiest to forget, because people tend to dive into astrology like a bowl of bonbons. And they just start nomming them down and like, oh, now I've got that. My Virgo moon is that. Oh, my Virgo moon is square Mars. Oh, I don't like that very much. Okay, my Saturn is in Capricorn. Oh, wow, my Saturn in Capricorn is conjunct Venus in Capricorn. Oh, that's maybe that's good. Maybe that's bad. I don't know. Too fast. It misses the crucial thing, which is the dimension shift, that you are no longer on the level of the game as the game is played, looking around at all these things that are horizontal to you. Suddenly, when you have the chart, you are looking at the whole thing from a vertical standpoint, from above. It's not a bad thing. It's above. You're above it. You have to be above it. That's the point, is that you are above it. That the astrology process offers you a sense of perspective and a sense of a total view. And it is not just a global view. It is a cosmic view. It is a view of the mini cosmos known as the solar system, with, as I use the chart, several deep space points involved, and occasionally fixed stars. It can be very exciting to use fixed stars and deep space points, though there's a lot of things to read. But it doesn't matter so much what you read as it does the fact that you are looking at this thing from above. Now, I discovered this initially working with a tarot. And my theory of the tarot, which maybe I can even find what I wrote. Okay, I've just rummaged through my collection of poetry books I wrote in the late 1980s and could not find it. So the short essay that I wrote, and I forget in which book it was, I think a thing called 444, was called A Whole New Sound, Reading the Tarot. And I was very new to the tarot. And I was noticing what was going on. Of course, I was doing the thing where you pull the card, look up the card, and look up the spread, and look up the meaning of the position in the spread, and all this stuff. And my approach to teaching tarot was completely changed from the method that I learned with, which was this look it up method. And I can come to that in a bit. And what I said was there were three fundamental things that I noticed about reading the tarot. I'm not sure I can remember the third one, but I can definitely remember the first two. So the first one was that the cards are drawn through random shuffling, right? The thing that makes the tarot card reading is that the cards are shuffled, right? And you know, all the teachers and all the books say you got to shuffle those cards really well. That's creating random order. And then you reach in and you might contemplate something and you pull out a card. Well, there's a lot in that. This is completely different than the normal way we seek information. The normal way we seek information is, I don't know, these days, you know, you're looking for blood pressure medication and you type in blood pressure medication, safest, and then you find that out and then you start to read and you're looking at it in a supposedly orderly, organized fashion by topic. But with tarot, you shuffle the deck, you think of the question, and you randomly pull out a card this is a completely different universe than the seemingly rational approach to thought that we think that we use. So that's thing one, the introduction of the random. Now, the equivalent in astrology is that the birth time is random. The birth time is not usually planned, and if it is planned, it's usually planned because the obstetrician wants to play golf, not because there is a reason to plan based on the birth chart, right? I don't know if anybody has, maybe some crazy person somewhere has done a cesarean section to give their child the best birth chart, but they might want to think about the problems that they're causing that would not need to be if they just had a natural birth. But the idea of the birth chart is it is a random time. It's the time you were born, which is not planable. And the idea of the random time having significance is what gives the chart its meaning. Because if it is indeed a random time, there's no reason in rational thought that it should be meaningful in any way. It's just, it shouldn't be, right? So it is a profound experience of synchronicity to suddenly find out that this chart, which is supposedly randomly made, can seem custom made, right? This is incredible. And it is, I think, best to keep this in mind all the time and to proceed with profound respect for this quality, that somehow when we're doing tarot or astrology or many, many other forms of divination, I Ching and whatever, the random becomes the thing that's the most meaningful. Okay, so with the cards, the second thing I discovered was that you're above them. You, instead of being all wrapped up in your situation, you're asking a question: what am I going to do about this? What is the scenario here? What is this person doing in my life? And you draw the cards, and then you're looking down on the table at them. Huh, that's really interesting, because suddenly you have given yourself a form of objectivity. You've given yourself a form of detachment. You have shifted your point of view. This is the big thing. This is the thing that matters the most of all. As far as I'm concerned, the chart could be empty and the cards could be all face down and you would still get the benefit of this. You could still do the analysis staring down at a bunch of cards with the tarot tee finish on the back, that beautiful kind of striped or whatever pattern on the back of the cards, and do a kind of a reading of all the cards being upside down. I mean, try it sometime. And you would still have the benefit of the perspective shift without the need for the content. Now, this is very McLuhan-esque in that McLuhan is all about using the medium rather than the content as understanding the thing that gets the effect, the thing that produces the effect, that produces the shift, the transformation. And it does add some context to the notion that the content is a distraction from the perspective shift. Now, I would not go so far as to say that, but I will go so far as to say that the content can be a distraction from the perspective shift, and that's why it's helpful to recognize that this shift has taken place. First, we've introduced the element of the random, and then we have shifted our perspective entirely. And I will see if I can remember the third point in this short little article that I tucked into one of my poetry books called A Whole New Sound. I'm sure that I will eventually find it. I try to make my archives redundant enough that I, stash things in places, and sometimes I can be missing something that I think I know where it is, and then it's supposed to be in that place, then I find it somewhere else. Now, once you have this viewpoint, once you recognize that you're looking down at something, which is a picture of the solar system, there is a third transformation that occurs in astrology, and it's similar in tarot, because any of those 78 cards can show up in any one of those positions, unless it's shown up already, and then you know, what I do sometimes is I'll work with two or three decks so that it's possible that the same card can appear several times. With astrology, the thing you're looking down at is the solar system. You're looking down at the cosmos, especially considering you can put the galactic center in the chart, you can put the great attractor in the chart, you can start putting in other nearby stars in our galaxy as long as they can be seen individually and their position measured. You're looking at the cosmos. Well, that's interesting. So somehow there's been this transformation where you go from being this lone person on the face of the earth with problems and with issues you're trying to work out and solve, and then suddenly you're looking at a representation of the universe as you. Well, this is a macrocosm, microcosm switch. You are suddenly accepting the fact that you have something in common with the macrocosm. You have something in common with the largest sense of the picture, but then you're shrinking it down to the size of a piece of paper, and you're going to start to make marks on it, and you're going to start to read it, and this is saying that you have something in common with the greater cosmos. Along a similar line, the astrology chart has a wide variety of different potentials illustrated. Even if we only use a standard 9-planet chart, maybe toss in Chiron and a couple of asteroids, but not, you know, just a standard 9-planet chart, you still get several different manifestations of the masculine principle, several different manifestations of the feminine principle. You get an androgynous figure, which is Mercury. You see mundane angles. You see which indicate directions and points of orientation. You have a principle of expansion, Jupiter. You have a principle of restriction and structuring, Saturn. You have a principle of growth in the form of Pluto. You have a principle of spirituality and transcendent consciousness in the form of Neptune. And you are reminded that you contain all of these different principles. You are given an inventory of your possibilities. Well, golly gee, Jim Bob, that's incredible. Most people walk around telling themselves what idiots they are or thinking they only know how to do one thing. And by looking at this diagrammatic representation where you have all the same planets that Einstein and Bill Gates and Dolly Parton have, well, that is really special because, in a sense, it is saying that we all have the same essential set of potential qualities to work with. It's only a question of how and where they are arranged and where they are distributed, which leads to my next point, which is that people tend to have very limited views of their potential and tend to live in a small world. And when you are looking at an astrology chart, you are looking at a thing that has 12 houses. And you don't realize how many houses 12 houses is until you start to use those houses. And you start to experience the differences in environments that those houses describe. And there are going to be places where you don't have any planets. There are going to be places where you have lots of planets. There are going to be places that you have planets where you certainly were not expecting to based on the subject area. But the point is that you are looking at a 12-house representation which contains enough to include essentially any possibility into one of those 12 houses. I expand the capacity of the 12 houses by using the house cusps as special house transition zones. So, for example, the transition between the third and the fourth houses could be the transition between thinking and feeling. That can be the transition between walking around in your neighborhood and walking around inside your home or your homestead. It is a border area where there is going to be kind of some like molecular exchange. It's a little like the salt front of a brackish waterway. There's that point that's a special environment where there's the fresh water and there's the salt water, and then there's the point where they meet, which is the salt front, and there's going to be certain forms of life that like to follow around the salt front. And so when you have, for example, the ninth house of spirituality and the 10th house of professional activities meeting, thing, well, that's telling you that there is a zone where those two things meet, where professional activities can be informed by the ethics of spiritual practice. Normally, we think of spiritual practice as one thing and as professional activities as another thing. Another thing you get looking at the houses, again, without any planets in them at all, is that there are several different representations of what it means to work. One of those representations, for example, is house number 6, which is day-to-day work. The other representation is the 10th house, which is achievement and career and fame and notoriety, right? There's two totally different concepts there. One is rolling up your sleeves and getting it done. The other one is being the executive, making decisions, being visible, and having responsibility and authority over other people. And so when you look at the chart without any planets, and I've said many times, quoting Patrick Walker, that it's all in the houses, that if you're going to learn one thing about astrology, the thing to learn is the houses, because the houses tell you where it all shakes out. And the beauty of looking at the chart from above is that you see that there are 12 regions, there are 12 distinct environments, and you don't just live in one house. You live in 12 houses, and they all have different vibrations and different states of mind. And then as you start to understand through experience and practice what these houses mean, and then you start to understand that there are planets in those houses, and those planets in those houses can have reveal things by their placements, you're going to find that your consciousness is much more adaptable and expandable than you may have thought in previous attempts to understand yourself. A couple of other points. And I'm going to get into this what becomes video audio number 4. I think I'm going to do this in audio number 4, because this was going to be number 3, but now I'm making it number 1. Okay, so because it's so foundational to look at the chart as a concept itself first, and the act of looking at the chart. It's kind of like it puts you in the position of God looking down on the whole thing, only the whole thing you're looking down at is your life. Okay, a couple of other points. I am big on the use of the progressed horoscope. There are not a lot of good books written about the progressed horoscope, and I think that a lot of what is said about the progressed horoscope is not necessarily helpful, and I have never read my theory of the progressed horoscope in any book, and frankly, I've never read a whole book about progressions. I was just taught progressions by a very kind woman named Laurie Burnett, who kind of took over as my first astrology teacher. When I was back at the stage of only reading the New York Post horoscope and the Mountain Astrologer magazine, and I found an ad by Laurie in the back of the Mountain Astrologer magazine where she said that if you are looking for someone to edit your astrology book, write to me. And it was 1994. I had never written a whole sentence of astrology, and I wrote to her, and we became friends. And it turned out that Laurie Burnett was the ex-wife of Jeffrey Green, who wrote Pluto, Evolutionary Journey of the Soul, or shall we say that Jeffrey Green was more like the co-writer of Pluto, Evolutionary Journey of the Soul, and Laurie was the person with the formal astrological training and the experience and the reading and the scholarship and the ability to write and to edit, who basically put the book together from some concepts of Jeff's. So long after she had split up with Jeff, I encountered her, and I found her to be a very eager teacher, and she pointed me initially right in the direction of 3 things. She said, thing 1, if you like Pluto, you will love Chiron. Okay, there's someone named Barbara Han Clow. You should read her stuff. Okay, that's good. That was fruitful. That set the course of my whole career. The second thing she said was, you really need to read Esoteric Astrology by Alice A. Bailey. And she sent me her tattered copy with the cover torn off that eventually I sent back to her. And I had this crazy, mysterious 600-page book, amongst the other more elementary-seeming books in my collection. And, if you've ever dipped into esoteric astrology, you'll see that it is coming from a completely different viewpoint than any other astrology book. And it is arguably ridiculously bad, except for the fact that it's not. And you can hear, when Rob Hand critiques esoteric astrology, I find it humorous because I like watching his mind work, and I don't take offense to the fact that he thinks that esoteric astrology is basically the biggest piece of garbage ever put into print and called an astrology book, because I love Rob, I love what he says, and I have read esoteric astrology a couple of times, and it's absolutely incredible, and I learned so much from it. So I'm one of those weird people who's able to hold completely opposing thoughts in my mind. So Lori points me to esoteric astrology, which I finally bear down and read cover to cover in the summer of 1998, when I was writing the Planet Waves column on Rob Breshny's website, realastrology.com, for his monthly publication, The Televisionary Oracle. Okay, so third thing, and my point here, after this brief digression, is Lori said, read progressions. Like, how do you read progressions? Look at them. First thing, you look at them. Okay, so from that point on, now we're talking the first time I'm getting way back at the beginning. This is like mid-90s. I start getting, this is before I even had software, progressed horoscopes. The progressed horoscope generally is a holographic representation of the movement of time. For example, a day per year is the most common one that is used. Those are called secondary progressions. I'm not, never quite figure it out. Primary directions are, so I think secondary progressions are secondary to primary directions, which are another method, and maybe we can get into this in a course on the progressed horoscope. But there's a structural piece here that is very important. When you are looking at a natal chart, it is easy to see that thing as a bunch of particles splattered onto the page. It is a fractal, not the moving chaos pattern. A fractal, we're going to get into this in number three, is a still representation of a chaos pattern. The chaos pattern is constantly moving and churning. And when you stop it for a moment and you take a sample of it, that's a fractal, F-R-A-C-T-A-L, which is a representative moment in time, but it's easy to forget that this thing is a living, moving thing. So you think, my moon is at 7 Aquarius 59. That's it, because that's where it is. And you look at your chart in 1971, and your moon is at 7 Aquarius 59. Then you look at your chart again in 1988, and it's still at 7 Aquarius. Maybe there's one arc minute correction because the computer software became more accurate, whatnot, but that is the place of your moon. It is easy to forget that all of those things are moving and that they are wave forms, not particles. What the progress chart does is that the progress chart reminds you that there is movement. Even if you don't know how to read it, even if you don't care to read it, you might notice that you were born with the sun in Aries, and now the sun is somehow in Gemini. And that would probably mean that, you're probably around 50 years old, your progressed sun has moved 50 degrees. What does it mean? Well, that's another question. But one thing that you can absolutely know that it means is that the sun is a thing in motion, and the progress chart is reminding you that there is movement. And so that's why, if for no other reason, I like to keep the progress chart nearby, is to remind me that this thing moves. It's not a still, stuck, static thing. And from there, there are some very basic techniques that you can use to read the progress chart that do not require you to look up what this thing means in books. I think it's very important to have some literacy, but not to have to depend on what things mean in books, particularly if they say, this is what this means, not this is what this might mean, this is what this potentially means, this is what this probably means, or this one. usually the books are very declarative and definitive. And thankfully, there are some good ones, but even the good ones, you have to watch out for the writer's point of view. So to conclude the brief mention of the structural value, qualitative rather than the quantitative, the medium rather than the content of the progress chart, is that it is a reminder that the chart is a thing in motion. And so if you play back this audio, I'm keeping things down to half an hour so that they're kind of consumable and I don't kind of blow your mind entirely all at once. We'll just do it slowly, a little at a time. Is that what we have is the difference between not reading the chart and reading the chart introduces the random moment having meaning and the shift in perspective from being on the level of the game to above the level of the game. There are times it is great fun to be on the field playing the game or on the field watching from the sidelines. But there are other times when you want to go up as high as you possibly can and look down on things. And that is what we are doing with tarot and astrology. And it creates the ability to see things in a slightly more detached and abstract way so that you're not completely wrapped up in them. And that is the part of your mind that is being activated. The third thing I've added to this discussion, unplanned, is the idea that this chart is a thing in motion. And just to preview a little bit, the fourth discussion, since this becomes one and the two existing ones become two and three, the fourth one is going to look at another version of the relationship between science and the chart, which is more contemporary versions of science that are not just based on Newtonian gravity, i.e. the obstetrician exerts more force than Pluto or Jupiter. That's questionable anyway. And let's leave it at that. If you are actually listening to these and you have questions, you are most welcome to write to me at efc@planetwaves.net. If you like, we can start a class discussion email group. That is my preferred way to do things, not on Facebook, but we do have an astrology class Facebook page, and we can use that. So the idea of this particular class is that it is self-paced, and you know, you study and reflect and practice, you know, get with people and read their charts with them. I will, in this series, since this is the philosophy of astrology, I'm going to talk more about the nature of the houses and their relationship to one another, and also the importance of getting as much information from the client as you possibly can and how to do that. Okay, so all of that said, reporting in from a sunny, beautiful day in Kingston, New York. It's 9:04 in the morning on the 10th of April 2021, right ahead of the Aries new moon. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.